Hello and welcome to the first ever i5 Sports and Prospect Watch podcast. I'm Baron Kuhn along with Corey Scarbeck and Ryan Craighead. How you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Baron. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks. Corey, how about you?
Good, good. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. Well, today we were thinking about talking about our top 30, just in normal head-to-head fantasy. Also got a couple prospects we wanted to discuss. And also, if you want to follow along with us, you can go to i5sports.blogspot.com or prospectwatch.blogspot.com. Also, send us an email, i5sports@gmail.com. And yeah, and we'll try to get to those during our next show. So first off, what's the deal with the with your top 30? If Corey, you want to go over that for a little bit?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and, I'll start talking about mine, why I put my guys there. First off, obviously, Albert Pujols. I think the top two are pretty well established everywhere. I've seen difference when you get to, three through 10, but, 1-2, Albert Pujols, Hanley Ramirez, I think is an easy 1-2. I really like Hanley with being a shortstop. The position is really, really weak this year. I mean, he's an easy number two. At three, I happen to put Evan Longoria. Again, it's another position thing. Being a third baseman, it's just there aren't that many out there this year of the elite. And once the elite drop off, it's a pretty big drop. I think, obviously, after that, you'd go Miguel Cabrera. I got Tulo next, again, shortstop. And then I go with Cano, Votto, Carlos Gonzalez, Adrian Gonzalez, and then David Wright.
Okay, cool.
A couple of these guys, Cano at six at second base. I just like him. I think he's clearly the top second baseman out there, and I think he's going to have another solid year. Votto, he had a great year, and I would love to put him higher, but first base is so deep, it's too hard. I mean, I already have four first basemen here in the top 10, which, they're good, but, it's when you talk about position, it sometimes might be better to go with something else.
Right. Yeah, I even have Votto at 11. And on Prospect Watch, you can look at both Corey and my top 30. And Craig Ed hasn't given us a top 30 yet, so he's just here to, talk about it and find errors in our ways.
And ask questions like, why there's only one outfielder in your top 10, Corey, but four first basemen?
Simply, I mean that's a good question. Really, it really is, because outfield and first base are both positions with a lot of players, a lot of quality players in it, but I don't know, I just thought that, Adrian Gonzalez I had to put in there with his move to Boston. I think he's going to put up huge numbers. A guy I would actually think about dropping out of the top 10 is an outfielder, is Carlos Gonzalez. If you ever look at his home-away splits, it's actually pretty ridiculous how much different that is.
Right. Yeah, that's a guy that a lot of people are going to take off the board as the first outfielder, which I think is a big mistake. I got Ryan Braun at six, and I just don't see how, you could go and take Carlos Gonzalez after one really good season. But yeah, with those home away splits, I don't see it.
Especially with the division he plays in, because he plays in a lot of pitcher's parks.
Right. I mean, I do have him at seven, so I think he's going to have a good year. But I definitely think Ryan Braun should go ahead of him, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You guys don't think Crawford's going to be better than 12 and 13?
No, I don't. I mean, I think the steals are going to go down. I just don't think they're going to be running as much with him batting where he's going to be. Because I think they're going to bat him either three or four.
And the Red Sox don't run either.
Right. I mean, Ellsbury ran a couple of years ago, but that's about it on that front. So, okay, well, what do you I'm definitely more of a position scarcity guy, so putting Albert over Hanley was even hard for me to do, even though, I think it's a clear a clear race for one and two. But yeah, even that was tough, just because I'd really struggle with it, because I'd like to shore up my shortstop position, which is definitely, in my opinion, the shallowest this year of any position.
Yeah, I would have to go ahead and agree with you there, Baron. I think it's pretty honestly, if I was one, I would consider taking Hanley, because I know it's Albert and he's the best player there is out right currently, but shortstop. I mean, if you can get a, you can find a quality first baseman way later in the draft, even into the second round, if you want to pass on him. I know it's hard to do, but I would strongly consider it.
I mean, those guys, like, I mean, when I ranked my top 20, I mean, I'd be happy with any of those guys, pretty much. I mean, I the exception of a couple, but you can get Billy Butler real late, and I think he'll have a good year. Justin Smoke, maybe. Kendrick Morales is definitely going to fall pretty late because, I mean, he had basically a non-baseball injury, which so I don't think that's going to affect his numbers this year. What do you think about outside the top 10?
You know, I got Braun at 11. He could easily fall into the top 10. I like Braun. You know, again, outfielder. He could, you know, overtake either any of the first basemen, you know, besides probably Cabrera or Albert Pujols in the top 10.
Right. He did down year last year too, didn't he?
Ryan Braun. I think his numbers were down a little bit, but I don't think by much.
Oh.
I'll look it up real quick.
And then with 12, I got my first starting pitcher with Halladay. Probably the first starting pitcher that's going to be gone easily. And honestly, I could see Halladay dropping because starting pitching is very deep this year. There's a lot of quality starting pitchers, and you can definitely find guys late in the draft.
Yeah, what do you think, Craig?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's easy to get caught up in who you like.
Well, I know you had a little issue with us putting Tim Lincecum, which, you know, where we put him at the back end of our top 30. But
I had him drop to 28, and you had him all the way at 30.
Right.
I wouldn't separate Halladay and Lincecum a lot because both those guys are going to win new categories.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that. I think there's guys that will you know, earn up to their level. Or not quite their level, but, you know, earn up close to where they're getting, and you don't have to take them in the first or, you know, second round, which I think a lot of people will take Tim Lincecum in the second or, you know, the third round is where I have him. But, you know, I think there will be people who take that, and I always value position scarcity and offense. And if I can, you know, find a few gems in the pitching department late, I'm more than happy to do that.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you, Baron. It's all about position, and starting pitching is definitely something that I try to dig deep and find them later than earlier. Here, one of the guys I want to bring up here is we both have Josh Hamilton at 14. Craighead, tell us what you think about that.
It's because I kind of grown attached to him. I really want him higher, but it does make sense that he does have a little bit of that injury bug because he has had that history of physical abuse to himself.
When it comes to ability, Hamilton is, you know, top five, but you can't stay healthy. You're not doing anyone any good.
Right. And he had a great season last year. I mean, batting .359. Close to 100 runs, 32 home runs, and a solid 100 RBIs. I mean, the only thing I would bring up is that from my outfielder, if I'm taking a guy in, you know, the first or second round, I'm going to want somebody who steals bases. And that's just my opinion on the matter. I mean, that's why I have, you know, Ryan Braun, Carlos Gonzalez, and Carl Crawford all ahead of him. Yeah. It's just because I want that two-sided element. You know, from one of my outfielders.
That makes a lot of sense.
It just helps, in my opinion, helps me out, you know, for the rest of the draft, and I don't have to worry about speed as much.
It makes sense because, the guys that I want to try to stay away from are the one-category beasts, like a Rajah Davis, a Michael Bourne. The guys are just going to steal you 50, 60 bases, but not really give you any solid numbers in any other category.
Right, and may even hurt you in the average department.
Yeah, I would rather, you know, maybe take, you know, some guy who's going to give you something across the board instead of, you know, a one category beast.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on that top 30 or?
I want to bring up one more thing here. One of the biggest differences between our top 30 is that you've included two catchers where I chose because catchers, I won't take catcher till the fourth round at least. So, Why don't you go ahead and tell us, you know, your decision there to put the catchers here. I think you have Maurer here at 16.
Yeah, and then I have, at 29, I actually adjusted my top 30. After you had told me that last week, I was thinking a little bit more about it because I did have Victor Martinez at 29, and I swapped him out for Kevin Youkilis just because, I listened to what you said and I agreed with you, and I figured on the other hand also that Kevin Youkilis deserved to be in the top 30, because he is a third baseman and he is valuable at that position and should be in a really, really good lineup. But I guess my reasoning for having it initially was just that catcher, it's a shallow spot. It's a shallow position. I mean, there's Joe Mauer, and a couple other guys that I'd, be willing to take, not necessarily in the first round, but in my top 30. And I did have Victor Martinez in there for that reason. I mean, the other guy after him, I think it's Buster Posey, but
Yeah. Brad McCann too. He's been
Oh
so
yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Brian McCann and then Buster Posey. My fault. But yeah, I guess that was my only thing. I sometimes do value position scarcity a little more than it should be.
Yeah, I agree with basically everything you said. It's the fact that catchers just don't go that early. I don't see catchers go that early from my experience at least. And
Right.
so I try not to reach as much as I can. So if I can take a guy who, maybe is at a non-scarce position but is going to put up better numbers than any of the catchers, then, I'm going to definitely take him there. But again, one thing you do need to watch is as far as, what I think catchers go, someone else may take a catcher in the second round, and that may lead me to taking a catcher in the third round or a second same in the second round, because, you can always have once that the top catcher, top closer, top any position that usually goes later, you can have a run on those positions. So you want to make sure not to get left out and get stuck with a terrible, terrible catcher or something like that.
Right. And it does worry me. I am worried just because of the power drop that we saw last year in Joe Mauer. But I think when you can get, close to 90 runs, maybe even 90 plus runs, which he had the 2 years before last year, and 80, 90 RBIs with a great average, that's at a position where most of the guys are going to be hitting, or scoring about 50 runs, driving in maybe 60 and hitting 260 or something like that. And I like to have the best players at premium positions because it gives me a lot more, I don't know, I guess wiggle room when I'm trying to find guys on the waiver wire at first base or at outfield or some other position that I might be weak at. That's just my take on it. And
I want to bring something up about Mauer that you said here. You said the lack of power last year, and I think it's not a lack of power of last year. I think 09 was a surge of power. I think because if you look at his career numbers, the most home runs he had ever hit before that was 13 in 06, and in 08 he hit 9, and in 08 he hit 9, and 09 he hit 28, and then again in 10 he hit 9 again. So I don't think he's a 28, 30, 25 to 30 home run guy. I think he's more of a 10 to 15 home run guy.
Right, and that's what I would expect him to get back to.
Yeah. And I think it probably definitely led to some reaching last year of, with people thinking that that power is going to be there.
Right. Yep. That all works for me. Anything else on that list, Craig Ed, Corey?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Kevin Youkilis again. I do like your addition of him in the top 30 because I can definitely see he belongs there. One thing I want people to remember, though, is that he does not start the season with third base eligibility. He is only
Right.
first base eligible and will get third base eligibility about, halfway through the first month, sometime through the first month.
Yep.
And then that will, because third base definitely is shallow, and adding Kevin Youkilis to that mix, he's definitely in the top five, without a doubt.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Craig?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, his season last year was marred by injury, where he
Right.
missed several months, but he's definitely got to be up there for average RBIs runs.
I mean, if you look at him as far as stats go and compare him to a guy like Ryan Zimmerman, who will probably, go in the top or the first, two, maybe, into the third round, I think they're going to have pretty similar stats by the end of the year. And I think you can get Euclid a little later. So there's one more guy that I wanted to bring up on Corey on your list, and that was Jason Hayward at 30. And I personally, I think that's a little high for him. What do you have to say for yourself?
Oh, it is definitely a reach for Hayward. I mean, not that it's that big of a reach, but it's a reach. And right now, I'm just gonna say I'm a huge Braves fan, and I'm gonna do everything in my power to have Hayward on my team. I like him that much. I think he's a solid player, and I don't think, watching him, I don't think as much people really get how good of a player he really is unless you watch him every day, because you don't see what he does on the base pass. I've seen him score from first on a double. Just he reads the ball extremely well. He's gonna get you maybe more runs. He's gonna maybe get you some more RBIs. Definitely another thing I like about him is his value. I would definitely say his value is here if you include on base percentage, because this guy is he's a walks machine. I mean, I think he had an on base percentage that was well over 100 points higher than his batting average last year, which I think
Yeah, it looks
if
like
you
he had a 277 average and a 393 on base
yeah.
percentage.
And if you have on base percentage, which some leagues do because some people value on base percentage over average and they'll use that,
Right.
then definitely Hayward, I would say, is top 30, top 40.
Right. Yeah, he almost walked 100 times.
Yeah.
So
He has a great eye. So I mean that's why I put Hayward there. Mostly it's a reach, but I think he will have value there, and especially in keepers, it's definitely not a reach because
Right.
for years to come, I think he's going to be forced to reckon with.
Oh yeah, definitely in a keeper league, I could even see him going higher than this. But in our normal, 10 team league, 5x5 head to head or rotisserie, whatever you're playing in, I think it is, and I know you do too, but you're just, blinded by love, if you want to call it that. Yeah, definitely a reach, but
Well,
great talent, and he'll definitely be in the top 30, in years to come.
one more thing about this is just let me ask you guys, where do you think he should legitimately fall?
Maybe the fifth or sixth round. He's not a guy that's going to be on any of my teams, and we can talk about that in the next podcast. Just guys that you think are way overvalued, and this guy would have to be on my list. As far as on draft day.
Yeah, he's a couple years away from being a top flight fantasy producer.
I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. He had a good year last year with 18 home runs and 72 RBIs and 11 steals, decent average, decent amount of runs. It's just I don't know if he'll make that big of a jump this year to warrant that spot.
One more thing about Hayward is I want you to remember his thumb injury he had before the All-Star break, because I think that if you'll see it in his numbers, because he had a huge start, and when he hurt his thumb, and he definitely was not the same player at the plate, and then he had a great start after he had some rest at the All-Star break, and he was on the 15-day DL leading up to that, and he had a great start after the All-Star break, and I think his thumb injury did hamper his season. I think it cost him the Rookie of the Year award, because I honestly think he would have won Rookie of the Year had he been healthy the whole season.
Yeah, it looks like he had more at bats after the All-Star game, and he hit fewer home runs and drove in almost half as many RBIs. So I could definitely see that. The only thing that isn't different is the average, and that could be, because he was just coming into the league, he's figuring out major league pitching, so.
Well, there's also the fact that with the numbers drop in the second half, not only a thumb injury, but major league hitters figuring him out. So you might want to take that into consideration. And the thing about baseball, it's a constant game of changing. You've got to beat him. He wants to beat you. What do you? He knows your weaknesses. You know his. So
Right.
it's
How did he end the
constantly
season?
changing.
What was that, Craig?
How did he end the season? Maybe he's just getting tired, getting used to the big league schedule.
Let's see. September, he hit 278. August was a really good month for him. Hit almost 300 with 5 home runs. Yeah. I mean, he finished pretty strong. I don't think fatigue was an issue.
Well, I think that could play a factor into it, because if you look at his minor league stats, he never. Let me I'm pulling it up right here to be exact. But before, he always had minor injuries that always kind of hampered him in the minors, I think. The most at bats he ever had was in 08 when he had 471, and then 09 he only had 362 at bats. So
okay.
So a full season could have hampered him. You know, it's really hard to
it's
tell
possible,
because you don't know how a player is feeling, and they'll never say, "Oh, I was fatigued," or "Oh, this injury is hampering me." A lot of these players will say, "Oh no, it's fine," when it's really not.
Right.
That's something that should be remembered.
Yep. Nope. Definitely makes sense.
Well, I think we've established a solid ground here on our top 30. Why don't we go ahead and move on to prospects? Baron, is there someone you'd like to talk about?
Well, a guy that I traded for recently in my in our 20-team dynasty league, and I think, you know, is due for big things in the majors, is Brett Laurie, who was also just traded to the Toronto Blue Jays a few weeks ago. And what do you guys think about that?
What about that?
What do you think about Brett Laurie as a prospect? I mean, where do you see him? What do you see him doing in the majors?
He definitely fits the mold of the typical Blue Jays, or the Blue Jay of last year, where it's lots of power, not so much average. That type of player.
Mm-hmm.
Underdeveloped a little bit, but he could rake. That's everything I heard about him.
Yeah, no, I've heard he has, you know, plus power. He hasn't necessarily shown it all in the minors, but any thoughts on that, Corey?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to bring up is his position, especially when it comes to fantasy. It becomes a big issue. Where is this permanent position going to be? And I don't know if he
right.
can stick it second. I've read that, you know, his defense isn't all it can be, and it does worry me. Because
mm-hmm.
obviously, being a second baseman, his value goes up tremendously compared to being, you know, in the outfield. Again, because that position scarcity.
Right, definitely.
I would love to see him stay at second, but you don't know what's going to happen. So, I mean, that's something to consider when you're talking about Brett Laurie.
Right, and it, you know, it's to be seen because he has yet to hit Triple A, so he'll probably start off there this year. May even get a taste of the majors, but if they come out and they start putting him in outfield consistently, I'm gonna be trying to move him. I think, because I mean, I traded for him so I could have a second baseman of the future.
And you chose Brett Laurie?
And I chose Brett Laurie.
That's your second yep. baseman of the future?
Yeah, for my dynasty team.
All right, man.
We'll see what happens. I know you had a prospect you wanted to bring up, Corey.
Yeah, I want to talk about Tehran, you know, the right-handed pitcher for the Braves.
Okay.
He finished up at Double-A last year. Solid numbers. I really like this kid. He's not as big as some people like, but that doesn't really bother me. I mean, when you look at a guy like Tim Lincecum, when he throws as hard as he can for his size, and really it's about mechanics and how you throw, and I don't think his size should really hinder him at all. I like his
mm-hmm.
Strikeout ability. His Ks per nine last year was at 10, and it dropped off in 2009. It was only 7.4, but you know he's only 19 now, so he's still young, and you know he's a shot at making the majors this year. But you know I see him as a full-fledged starter by 2012 in the Braves rotation.
Yeah, I mean he had a great ERA last season in Double A. Really is his first taste that high, and you know 8.6 strikeouts per nine. I'm not going to complain with that. He didn't walk very many batters at all either. So I mean all those stand out as good numbers, and hopefully you know this season you can see him in a Braves uniform.
Yeah, that would be great to see him up in that rotation. Yeah, I'm really high on him. I think he has a solid three pitches, and I mean that's really what you need when you're going to be a major league starter. Yeah, you always talk about potential starters' pitches, because a lot of times you'll hear he has a solid fastball and some breaking ball, and then it's their changeup. But
mm-hmm.
I think his changeup is one of his best pitches, which is going to lead to, you know, it's which really helps at the major league level. You need a changeup to be a major league starter.
All right, what do you think, Craig Ed?
Yeah, the only thing that I have to add is he's in a great organization for pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
The Braves have a big history of churning out successful pitchers, and so it's a fantastic place to foster young talent like that.
Definitely, definitely.
That's definitely something that's a great point, because you can look at the Tigers organization, who seems to like to rush people. You think about Jeremy Bonderman, Rick Porcello, you know, I actually have Jacob Turner, their best pitching prospect currently, And it does worry me because when a system wants to rush a starting pitcher, I think pitching is what you really just got to slowly develop, you know, because a pitcher gets up there too early, he gets knocked around, his confidence gets shot, and, you know, next thing you know, he's overthrowing, he's messing with his mechanics, and he's just screwing himself up. So bring up the organization definitely I like that, Craighead, because that's something to consider too.
Yeah, guys, be wary of Michael Pineda. Mariners have a history of screwing up good pitching.
I thought they got Felix.
Oh yeah, that's their one success story. And the other one's
Randy. Who did the big unit come up with?
Yeah, I don't think we drafted him.
Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I like Brandon Morrow a lot this year on the Blue Jays, but yeah, I'd be wary of Michael Pineda. Craig, was there a prospect you wanted to bring up or anyone you were thinking about?
Just a side note here. Randy Johnson was drafted by the Expos in the second round in 1985.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Corey. No, I guess because this offseason in our league, I had the last pick, and so I didn't really have a bunch of...
Why did you have last pick?
Well, because I'm the best, Corey.
Corey, I didn't say anything. Don't be... Barron's one calling you out here.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to know. I just was curious.
Yeah, because I was able to win. And,
okay.
Well, not just win, but start out with a above 500 record and then keep that going. I know that you guys were not able to be so lucky.
No, I wasn't. I was kind of in a rebuilding year.
Yeah, if we're talking about our teams here, that's definitely – me and Barron talked about this a lot when we joined this league. And one thing that – you know, the listeners should know is that we joined this league in its second year, so we inherited some teams. Mm-hmm. And both I know my goal, and Barron, you know, told me this too, is our goals were to get younger and to mm-hmm. really establish a team, because this is a dynasty league and we got these guys for years. So I figured, you know, instead of trying to win, you know, maybe last year and this year, I'm going to try to win, you know, make a dynasty, a real dynasty, and try to take this thing and be like the Braves when they were in the playoffs for 14 straight years. And
definitely, yeah.
That was my goal. So that's you know, and I think I finished, you know, second in my division. I think it was ninth overall by record. So,
Yep, I did not finish as well. But I got some good young guys that a couple of them should break out this year. Jay Bruce, one I'm looking at hopefully having a great year. Other than that, you know, I got Pedro Alvarez. We'll see what happens. I mean, I like my team. I'm not sure if they're ready to win yet. So we'll see.
It will definitely be an interesting year in our league. I would have to say that.
And we can tackle that next week.
That's true.
Yep.
The reason I brought that up was because my drafting style this year, I didn't have a lot of top tier guys that I was excited about because they weren't going to follow me, so I just had to dig a little bit deeper.
Right.
And find guys that maybe they're not top 50 right now, but they will be.
Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely a good strategy to go after.
Like, for instance, I took Angel Beltre, mm-hmm. the outfielder for the Rangers, with my first pick this year because he was the organization's minor league player of the year. And I like that aspect of proven success.
Definitely.
I'm really glad you brought him up, Craighead, because I think he has the talent to be and a really good, a five-tool player. But at the plate, he's very God. What's the word I'm looking for here? He doesn't have good plate discipline. He swings at a lot of bad pitches. He likes the high strikes, the high fastballs, and he'll swing a lot of pitches in the dirt. Obviously, he's still young and there's a lot that can change there, but as of now, you know, we'll see where that goes. And if he can develop that discipline and, you know, swing at better pitches, he can be an outstanding player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what I'm hoping for. Oh, also, my favorite guy in my minors right now is Ryan Westmoreland. He's the outfielder prospect for the Red Sox. And he was top 25 last year as a 19-year-old, but then he had a brain surgery, so he kind of had to take a step back.
No, that's awesome. Good, great success story. Hopefully he can, you know, make a splash this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That reminds me of Lester, and you know, he had they have testicular cancer, or was it different?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I thought, you know, and that was great, you know, when he came back and he pitched that no-hitter, and to see those success stories are amazing, because you know, you never know how a guy's going to come back from something, you know, that's non-baseball related illness.
Yeah.
Actually, he had lymphoma.
Ah, my fault. I wasn't quite sure. I just, you know,
yeah.
I knew he had some kind of cancer, so.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for this, and we will reconvene next week. I'm going to try and get this podcast out for Monday and have that be our weekly day for the podcast to be posted on the website and on iTunes. Until then, send us some emails and we will read them on the show and give you our expert opinion. Thank you and goodbye.
Yay.